Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I'm so excited on this cold winter day to talk about how we can be a little bit smarter about insulating our houses. And so the main message that I want to convey to you, audience, is that we're here with a key theme of what Andrew Legge of Havlick Wool is going to be talking with us about. That what we do is, number one, is we need to help make informed decisions about smart insulation. And number two, we need to help people realize, particularly in today's market, that building better, it's just a decision. And if you want it, Tribe, we can do it. The industry drives us to a commonly repeatable playbook that is largely why the built environment creates such a problem for our planet. If we slow down a fraction, we can make exponential change. And as Matt McMullen, is our executive director that's been on a lot of these podcasts, talks about, Devin, we got to do a little T before we GSD, because we have to thoughtfully get shit done. Don't just go do it and then tell me it's built and fix it. Sure, loads of our folks don't care. And quite frankly, this podcast is not for you if you don't care. But if you follow generations' long-run demand, it's changing. And this changing is here. And on the pre-interviews, Andrew and I, the part that I'm so excited about, the main message is that there's this huge dichotomy of people that are just too tired to care and this new tribe coming in that are demanding this stuff, right? So what Andrew's perspective on how this is going to benefit you is he's had the opportunity to listen to quite a few of our interviews. And Andrew, thank you for doing that. That's what we call a leader of the master facilitators, because we have to listen to enough perspectives. And people are always asking me, Devin, like, how can you talk so much about all these different moving parts? It's like, Tribe, I listen. I've had done over 300 of these, right? And putting these all together, it's all of you and all of us coming together that at the end we'll talk about the master facilitator programs. And it seems quite clear from his perspective that there's an educational approach to creating a better built environment. And I couldn't agree more. And so what they believe, and I couldn't agree more, is that it's this awareness, right? We have to create this educational content, and then we have to figure out that people just don't know what they don't know, and they're jaded by what they think they know. And we would simply like to add another arrow in the quiver, which is to say, insulation, Tribe, it's super important, and there are better options. And I raise my hand and say, I've never used wool. I don't know about wool. I specifically didn't do a lot of research on this one because I'm coming to learn with all of you, Tribe, and Andrew's going to tell us that wool is one of them. And so my perspective is that we're here to learn about smart alternatives when it comes to insulation and how that works. And so Andrew Legge, the founding and managing partner of Havlick Wool, a great platform that we're hearing a ton about online and all the different presence, gaining a lot of traction. And we're super excited to have his story come in to learn how we can look at Havlick Wool and what they're doing to build better buildings and have as much fun as possible. Lock and load, Tribe. What's your favorite beverage?
Honestly, Devin, I've got two at the moment.
All right.
One of them is a lasting one, and that is a coffee in the morning that is a long black or an 8-ounce Americano. I stipulate the 8-ounce because a lot of times these things get overfilled with water and then you can't taste the coffee. So I'm quite particular about two shots and it remaining at 8 ounces, if not less. And then I've sort of been sampling around. I mean, I'm a beer lover, but I'm sort of graduating away from some of these really fun, big hazies. And I've been sampling around in the cocktail world. And right now I'm drinking what I would call a winter bramble. Mm. And that is rye, blackberry liqueur, lemon, simple syrup, and basil. And you shake it. It takes about 30 seconds to make one. You shake it with ice and you pour it in a glass and drink it up, and it is delicious. So those are the current.
Well, this podcast is already a success. I was thinking what was going to be my holiday drink as we're right before the holidays. So Andrew, I'm going to have to get that recipe formula, and we'll put that stuff in the show notes. And I'm going to go get the ingredients and make that my holiday cocktail. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. And just for ultimate clarity, a bramble is typically gin-based, but I live in the Lake Tahoe area, and I asked somebody to make one the other day, and they did it with rye. And to be honest, I think it's even better.
Well, and you're speaking my language. As people always say, what's your favorite bourbon? I always say the next one I haven't tried. But I'm starting to change that to just say, you know, just because you can doesn't mean you should, right? If you find some really good stuff, and I'm not a gin guy. So yeah, you're definitely speaking my language. What is a favorite place you've traveled?
Oh man, I'm really lucky to have traveled rather extensively. I actually lived in Southeast Asia for 6 years and have really bounced kind of all over the place. But I think it would be nuts for me to not just point straight to my favorite, which is why Havelock Wool exists. And that is New Zealand. I'm sure we'll get into this, but that's the origin of the creation of this business. And of course, our passion for all things wool related, and there's a lot of it in New Zealand. And so I'd have to say that's my favorite spot.
And our passions definitely align. We actually did our honeymoon 2 weeks, just rented an RV and did the loop of the whole South Island. And I saw a lot of sheep and learned a lot about, I was big All Blacks New Zealand rugby fan and ran a rugby team. And it was always a passion to go do that. But yeah, when you got out in the countryside, I definitely can appreciate what that's all about. So what is your favorite hobby or interest outside the construction silos when it comes to insulation? We're going to break down and we'll talk about next, but what do you do outside of that we passionately call the art of construction?
I've been fairly active my whole life, and have kind of delved into a whole bunch of things. But I would say most of my time is spent either playing golf, skiing, throwing a fly line, or riding my mountain bike.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like we need to go to New Zealand and Colorado together. Those are two very good places for all the stuff we like to do outside of this, but also ties into the business that I'm super excited, Andrew, for you to tell us your story that led you to founding Havelock Wool. And as I talked about on the intro, like I raised my hand, and this is definitely one I'm jaded about, especially as if this morning we did a LinkedIn Live as we're launching the Art of Construction Master Facilitator program. And shout out to Johnny Rizvani with 475. I went deep from the podcast trying to not use any spray foam on our show home. And we went down to the path where 7 months later, the municipalities, I finally said to give in, and we're putting some spray foam in one spot of the place. And now I can't do it because it's too cold, and it's just screwed up the whole project. And I tell you that story just because it's real world stuff, right? So I'm really excited. What is your story that led you to founding the real world Havelock Wool that is an alternative or a smart insulation? That I'm jaded by this, and I'm just going to put it out there that I'm super excited to learn your story around all this.
Yeah. So first off, sorry to hear about the foam. us and 475 are really against it, as you guys talked about in your podcast. And as you know, those guys sort of live by that mantra, as do we. And I think that's part of what brought us together a number of years ago. They had another guy out here on the West Coast called Lucas Johnson. And we really had a lot of fun cruising around talking to folks about, you know, what some of these alternative ways to look at the envelope were. And actually we created something called the Smart Wall, and really had a lot of fun talking about the use of those Proclima membranes and wool. And, you know, frankly, you can use other insulations as well. But a lot of times in these envelopes, you're getting down to dealing with moisture, and there's just simply nothing better at dealing with moisture than wool. And so, you know, to your question of what led to the founding of Havelock, you know, I've answered this question a number of times, but I actually put some thought into it for today. And, you know, if I look back, and I'll spare everybody the history lesson, but if I look back, I've kind of always been trying to deviate into a different path and not just sort of getting out of college and going to New York and getting a job. I grew up on the East Coast, and that was sort of what everybody did. And I was always kind of looking to go in a different direction. And so, you know, one of the first things I did was move to San Francisco so I could ski more. But I was motivated. So I wanted to, you know, make sure I could still have what I perceived to be as a, you know, an office job or a real job. And that was, you know, sort of a product of my upbringing. But it wasn't long thereafter that I was again sort of saying, I need to go further. And so in 2005, I moved to Southeast Asia. And that was my first attempt at separating from financial services. And I got into some really fun things in, I was living in Saigon and got involved in property and property development. And then I actually ended up back in finance there. And in an effort to make a second escape, what I was doing is sort of putting together my views on how I was seeing the world. And I just didn't want to have a job so I could make as much money as possible. I was looking for a way to affect some positive change. And while I was in that part of the world, I had already been to New Zealand, but I was spending more and more time there. And so I was just kind of falling in love with the place, but I was also looking at it with the eye of an institutional investor, which is what I was doing at the time, working in investment management and mostly private equity focused on Vietnam and across different types of asset classes. And so I sort of took that lens and I started looking at New Zealand and I started realizing that there was amazing opportunities and amazing products and amazing stories and incredible marketing all happening right there. And nobody was paying attention. And there's a reason for that. It's a small market. And so, you know, if you're managing money and you're thinking about, you know, trying to earn a return for the people whose money you're looking after, you know, you tend to steer clear of small markets. And for me, that was just this glaring opportunity to go take a passion for this place and put my experience together. And so I decided in 2011 to go take a closer look. We had built a house there and really enjoyed going through that process. That gave me a really cool view of construction and kind of high end building in a different place. And I didn't even realize at the time, you know, how much of an effect that was going to have on the next 10 or 20 years of my life. And I'll just say right up front that the house that I built was insulated with wool and I didn't even know it. And I think that's incredibly telling to what we're doing these days. But basically what happened was I was looking around for opportunities. I was agnostic about what they might be, except that I wanted them to be New Zealand centric because I thought there was a great story to be told there. And sure enough, you know, one of New Zealand's leading commodities is where I ended up. And that was based on the fact that there was an opportunity to look at bringing wool insulation to the US market. And frankly, I just couldn't let the idea go. Once I was part of the discussion, we didn't do anything straight away. But after 2 years of, you know, getting back to the U.S., talking to friends and industry participants, whether they be builders or architects or even insulation installers, we finally, after a couple of years, decided that it was worth putting a company together. So we did so in 2013. And, you know, it's been an amazing ride. It's been nothing like what we mapped out, which I'm sure we'll get into. But you know, here we are in this built environment discussion, and we love what we do and we love the product that we offer. Obviously we're biased, but you know, we started the company because wool is a better product. It's a better fiber. It's designed to insulate. And so, you know, I'm not here as someone, you know, advocating for a company that I work for. I mean, we started this because of the belief and the integrity of a wool fiber, and we try to build the business around that.
Andrew, absolutely love that lead in. And thank you for thinking about, you know, and that's what we work really hard of, having these thought provoking questions that, like, I love how you say, I've been asked that question a lot, but I really thought about it today, and and sharing that story of, like, you know, business and pleasure. The people and say that's just business, you know, don't take it wrong. And I'm like, well, business, and it's all comes together, right? If you're having as much fun as possible. So you took your fun of skiing and outdoors and going to New Zealand and the business of being able to go out and travel And but saying the office job, but getting out and about to where you fell in love with New Zealand and figured out the storytelling around that. But I love the where you talk about being a small market, right? And that you have to have meaningful change. You have to be able to sometimes jump across the pond and put it all back together. But then you have to niche in. And that's where you said you built a house and then you built a business. And I really appreciate it. It was nothing like you mapped out. But I think by you mapping it out, if you wouldn't have mapped it out, you may not have a business because the only constant is change, but you do have to map that out, right? And as you map that out, I guess I want to start off by just talking through why wool for insulation. You dangled the carrot a little bit on your lead-in.
Sure. Well, the first sheep were domesticated 10,000 years ago. Wool has been used as an insulator longer than any fiber any of us have any experience with. Maybe the most iconic building in the world, the British Parliament, is insulated with wool. People have been messing around with it as an insulator, in structures since we've been building them. And of course, as if not more important, this fiber has been evolving in nature's R&D department as an insulator, protecting sheep from the elements, hot and cold, wet and dry. And so, this is really the origin for me in coming to this conclusion. And again, as an outdoorsman, of course, I have a lot of experience with wool. I was wearing Pendleton and L.L. Bean as a kid, and, my father's sadly not around anymore, but a lot of the wool shirts that he was wearing, I still have them and I wear them. And, hey, what about this notion of, spend more on something that's going to last forever? That's the business we're in. We're not in design obsolescence. We're not in create something that only lasts for a couple of years so the consumer has to buy more. We are in the business of you have to pay more for wool, and I'm sure we'll get into that, but spend your money wisely and only do it once. And so, there's this long story of using wool as insulation. People experience it every day in the outdoors, particularly where you are, where I am, people who are skiing, base layers are more and more made of merino wool. And we had our runs with synthetic fibers and Capiline and, Patagonia and North Face giving us those products. But guess what? They're man-made synthetic fibers. And so what happens after a couple of years, they don't work. And, we spend a lot of time drawing this correlation for people who understand that, in their garments and what they wear and as they insulate themselves, wool is increasingly something that people are thinking about and going back to thinking about, frankly, right? Because it used to be so pervasive. And then, we really got excited about synthetic fibers. And I think big companies drove that. And we saw the same thing. And we continue to see the same thing in the insulation world. And, we talk about a manufacturer-led race to the bottom. And the reason for that, I wouldn't say is necessarily the manufacturer's fault as much as it is the industry measuring insulation on one thing, really, and it's cost. And that's not doing anybody any favors. And so it's difficult for us because we cost more, but it's easy for us because we're a better product.
Sounds like you've had to answer that question a few times. Good stuff, man. What has been the feedback of builders over the years as you've tried to sell your product? And how has that changed or improved? We talk a lot about crusty contractor, and I'm one of those here because I just think of insulation of the person to just fill the walls of you have to use what the municipality tells you you have to use. But we have to figure out how to fight back in some cases. And I figure, love your feedback as this podcast is for our contractors and its affiliates to grow their business.
Yeah, there's a key component to this question, which is what has been the feedback over the years? And it's certainly evolved. When we started this business in 2013, we just sort of thought we'd jump right into the traditional channels to market. So we spent a lot of time going to lunch and learns with architects and drinking beers with builders, whether they were friends or friends of friends. And, you know, to be honest, nothing really happened. We had great meetings. Everybody enjoyed the product. We would get pulled aside, you know, repeatedly saying this is the coolest thing we've seen in building in a long time. And so it was like, oh, great. You know, all this fantastic feedback. Well, you know, was wool going in walls? No. And so we evolved our business on the back of that in terms of how we changed the discussion. But one thing that we did realize at the time is that if we could speak to the occupier of the house, then great things would happen. You know, we had a healthier product. We had a higher performing product. We had a safer product. We had a product to install that, you know, didn't require clothing and gas masks, protective clothing and gas masks. And then the end result, you know, is this, you know, incredibly sound, attenuated, comfortable, healthy living space. And that was happening over and over and over again, but on a very small scale, because, you know, we had to find people that were building houses, and most of them at the time were friends or friends of friends. So it gave us a platform to say, hey, we're talking to the wrong people, because if we speak to the people who are going to occupy this space, things are going to go well. If we speak to the people in the middle, things are probably not going to go well, is what we were learning, right? And we weren't predisposed to that negativity. We were finding it. And so what's been really interesting is this conversation's evolved with builders and even architects. We find that they use us for their own homes all the time. And yet it's way too difficult to get us in their client's home. And that sort of leaves us banging our head into the wall relative to the trade and the continued evolution that I think we need to see happen there. But I will say that, you know, we made a very concerted effort to go out and speak more to the consumer on the view that we could come back to the trade. And you know, we've now been in business for 9 years, and that's starting to happen. People have heard of Havelock Wool. People in the trade have used us. People are used to hearing clients come to them and say, I want Havelock Wool in these walls. And so the conversation is getting much better with the builder. And I think that, to be honest, we're really excited about a new product that we have coming out next year and what that's going to do with that discussion for not only the trade, but particularly the builder, because we see real opportunities for builders to affect positive change by changing material selection and educating their clients as the structure is being built. And so we've got high hopes for seeing some real positive change at the trade level happening with builders.
Well, that's super exciting. And we'll make sure to put information on the show notes as you're talking about new products. And so you kind of enlightened it to where you have to get to the true decision makers and talk about, you know, they'd use it on their project, but not their customers. That's definitely going to have to be unpacked in a good way to call ourselves out here, Art of Construction. So can you talk a little bit more, how do homeowners respond to your product, and kind of niche in a little bit more there?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we could niche way in here, and that's up to you. But basically, we have like a fanatical following. And, you know, a lot of this mission has been, frankly, me learning about the use of technology and direct-to-consumer content and digital marketing. And what we've been able to do is go out and speak to homeowners literally on a daily basis, to the point that there are not enough hours in the day for us to be, you know, consultative, provide the education that people need and frankly really want around what's going on in the performance of their building. And, you know, we are one component of some really cool things happening. But, you know, the simple answer is, unlike any other insulation where most people, you know, want to pretend that it's not there, ours is the exact opposite. You know, people will get it in their walls and then they'll be in the structure, whether it's a new build or you know, some addition or remodel, and all of a sudden they're like, I don't want to put the wallboard up. I love knowing that the wool is there. And luckily we're able to say, well, listen, you're still going to know it's there, even though the wallboard's going to go over it, because you're going to think about it and you're going to feel it literally on a daily basis. And so for us, you know, again, it's not Havelock wool, it's wool. This is such a dynamic fiber that does such amazing things to the way that you feel in the structure, that we find that homeowners love our product. We're of course proud to say that. We have a refrigerator in the office that's literally lined with handwritten notes from people telling us how much they love having wool in their house. And that's a real badge of honor for us. And, you know, hopefully we'll have a wall the size of the factory at some stage with those letters. But that's our mission. And we feel really good about, you know, the fact that we're able to create that for homeowners.
Good on you, man. And that, you know, what makes you get out of bed in the morning? I definitely can feel that passion. Good on you. So let's use the word sustainability and unpack that a little bit, because that's a challenging one, right? As you talked about at the beginning of, like, you know, the main driver is cost. Are there any conversations around sustainability and construction that you don't think we're having enough?
Well, I mean, this is a big one. I think that there's some great conversations happening in sustainability. I think that people are highly motivated and very well intentioned when they start down this path in whatever element of the built environment they're trying to occupy. I think they get off course sometimes, but by and large, I think the sustainability discussion is happening. It just needs to be a lot broader. I think it needs to become more mainstream. I think we need more people listening to your podcast. I think small businesses like ours need a bigger microphone to get the word out and help people understand that, you know, they can make better decisions and they're not that hard. And so I'm really inspired by what I've seen over the last 9 years in terms of positive change. We've seen, you know, new market participants come into our space in insulation, and the guys, you know, getting involved in hemp. I mean, we applaud those efforts, right? We're not here to sort of say, hey, we're the only ones doing this, because we're not. But I do think that, you know, we've got some challenges with the incumbent players, and we know who they are. I don't need to name them. I'm not here to bash, you know, any other business in this space. And frankly speaking, you know, we're not here to take 5 or 10% market share. We can't do that. There isn't enough wool. But I do believe that the sustainability discussion really needs to be better thought about. And I think, you know, we say this all the time, but it's clear there's more happening in Europe than there is in the US. There's more happening in Canada than there is in the US. And I think it gets down to, again, this education, you know, this awareness. And Sarah from Ardmore was on recently talking about common sense. You know, that's a huge part of what we do, is just use your brain, stop and think for a second. And particularly on the sustainability piece, our fibers are made in nature. They grow on the back of a sheep that eats grass fed by rainfall. When you look at fiber creation for other insulation manufacturers, I mean, you're talking about some of the highest net embodied energy in any type of product creation. And I'm frankly, I don't need to worry for those guys, because they can worry about themselves, you know, in their multi-billion dollar organizations. I hope they can figure it out. But, you know, as one of 8 billion people on the planet, you know, I get concerned about the amount of energy that it takes to create these products. And I think when you think about sustainability, I don't know that they really have an answer. They talk a lot about saving more energy than they use. Well, if you compare yourself to yourself, I guess that argument works. But what about if you compare other insulation options that are incredibly low embodied energy like us. I mean, I put our power bill on Instagram. You know, we run 60-year-old karting machines on VFDs, and, you know, we chew through chains and sprockets and pulleys, but it's such a different process. There's no high heat in what we do. And again, we're just taking what nature offers us in these wildly dynamic fibers, turning it into an insulation product and sending it to your job site. So, you know, we are a good example of sustainability. That's again why we started the company. It's not a bragging, right? It's because we knew we could do it and achieve it. And so I think that, you know, in this space where, you know, the built environment is contributing what it is to GHGs, and the material component of that is about 11%. And for clarity, the GHG contribution of the built environment is an estimated 40%. So, you know, there's a lot of work to be done here. And I think that, you know, we need more companies like, you know, Havelock Wool and Hemp Insulation to step into this void and figure it out. And I, you know, there's some guys, I think Johnny mentioned it when you guys spoke, there's some folks doing it with wood fibers. You know, there's the Gutex guys, of course, but then there's some stuff coming up in the US. And then, you know, there's cellulose, which gets used quite a lot, particularly in passive house. And, you know, some people like it, some people hate it. For me, it just gets back to that outdoorsman approach and thinking about walking into the backcountry when I'm skiing. You know, I'm putting wool on, I'm not putting on fiberglass, I'm not putting on newspaper to keep myself warm and protected from the elements. And so, you know, I think that the sustainability piece is starting to get addressed by small businesses. I think it's a major concern for, and should be a major concern for some of the larger guys, but, you know, hopefully we'll continue to move in that direction.
Good on you for that answer, right? Of like bridging the gap and giving some really some of the visuals you're showcasing when it comes to the clothing is really great.
Yeah, no, we think really hard about what we do, and we don't sit here all day and say, wow, we're better than everyone else, because, you know, one, we're not, and two, we're not the solution. You know, we're a successful endeavor for us is taking something like 0.5% of the market in the US. And you know, the global one would be fine too. I think there's some really fun and exciting global opportunities on the horizon for us. But yeah, I mean, we spend every day trying to see this market for what it is, not just, you know, through our lens, but everyone else. And, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do here is give people a better living or workspace, and harness this amazing fiber that nature gives us. And every time we do a house that, you know, the synthetic guys don't, you know, that's a step in the right direction.
All right. So the next thing I want to just really have you, so psychology, right? So the psychology, there's so much emotion, I think, of what you're talking about, right? They're the feeling when you're going into the backcountry of if you just had a newspaper on your back versus a big wool coat, to feel if you're going to take that treacherous run of taking that, put your life in the mountain's hands, but also your home, right? This is where you live. When you talk about people that don't want to cover up the walls with the wool, what psychological effect do you think it has to use a more natural materials in your home? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one thing I'd make a plug for all better insulations quickly in advance and just say, one of the things, you know, as a new guy 10 years ago to this conversation, one of the things that really struck me was, you know, why are we devoting such little time and effort to arguably the most important part of the structure, which is the envelope? It's literally, you know, let's get this thing up, let's frame it as fast as we can, let's stuff the framing with, you know, some junk, and, you know, let's get everything up so we can make it look pretty, right? And it doesn't take much to stop and do a better job in the envelope and therefore end up with a structure that's going to last longer, it's going to perform better, and now to your question, is going to make you feel better. And, you know, we all understand, we've seen this around the world where structures don't get built well and you get leaky homes and then people get mold and they get sick. And, you know, there's a lot of really gnarly stuff that goes to the downside of this discussion. But on the positive, again, it's back to, you know, this isn't opinion or conjecture or marketing spiel. This is the letters on our refrigerator of people experiencing wool and writing to us and saying, I can't believe how quiet my house is, how safe my environment feels, how much I enjoy thinking about what's in these walls. You know, the amino acids in wool will irreversibly bond with harmful chemicals like formaldehyde, NOx, and SO2. I mean, this is science. It's not make-believe. And so these things are really happening. And when you think about that against, you know, the EPA telling us that indoor air quality can be up to 5 times worse than outdoor air, again, like, you've got wool just checking another box and performing for you. And so, you know, I know that my house is insulated with wool. I love knowing that that's the case. And, you know, there are great benefits to that. You know, I have a 4-year-old and I love that, you know, we're not in a place where, again, sadly, sorry about the wall next to you, that's going to be stuffed with foam. And, you know, I've got one room in that has a crawl space underneath of it in my house. And I'm happy to admit this. It's cold because of the floor and I won't spray foam in it. And that would be a solution, but I don't want that stuff off-gassing in my house. And so I finally figured out a solution. I'm going to fill it with wool. And then I got my hands on some Gutex and I'm going to put it under there. I'm looking forward to, you know, finding a better way. And I think that, again, this is beyond wool. And the psychological effect is, I think when you stop and take the time and invest intellectually into better materials, there's this great knock-on effect that isn't being talked about because it's not being experienced that much. But, you know, maybe I can find a way to get the pictures on the refrigerator out to more people. And so people can understand that, hey, like, there is a real reason and there is a real return. And it's not just the power bill. There is a real, you know, emotional and psychological return to stopping, taking a little bit of time, putting better materials into the structure, and you get to enjoy them every single day once the construction is over.
I'm hooked. You got me. I'm there. Right. So how long do you think it'll take for all these homes to be built with sustainable and healthy materials? And what will it take to get us all there?
I'm really optimistic about a very tangible shift in long run demand. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine the other day. We lived together for a few years in Singapore, our families did. And he's now back in the Netherlands. And he still does a lot of work in Singapore. And he was looking at his calendar and thinking about whether or not he should make, you know, 2 trips so he could be around, you know, over the holidays and see his family. And his daughter, who's about 9 years old, said, "No, Dad, it's better for the planet if you make 1 trip. That doesn't have anything to do with wool insulation or the built environment. That's just the way people are starting to think. And, you know, I think folks like Greta Thunberg have had a great effect in bringing, you know, this climate disaster that we have on our hands to the forefront. And I think that older generations just don't think about it properly. And I think younger generations are really starting to do that. And so, you know, I think about these 10,000 square foot homes that, you know, have been built and to some extent are still being built. And I wonder if they're going to be like old castles in the UK where they end up being cut up into apartments because nobody can afford or wants to take on the bills associated with such a huge structure that doesn't get used. And that may seem crazy, but I suspect, and I, again, I hope, but I suspect that's a generation away, because, you know, the long run demand shift is very real. And it's about, I don't want to be cooped up in my house. I want to be outside doing cool stuff. And that's where those opportunities are. So I'm not going to get myself, you know, attached to this giant mortgage and this giant, you know, effort and undertaking in building a structure, because I want to get out and see the world. And, you know, I hope I'm not naive in that view, because, you know, I have it, and that's the way that, you know, we view things in my house. But I really do believe that there's a real shift going on in where the priorities are. And of course, irrespective of my views, with now 8 billion people on the planet, it's quite clear every day when you look at weather patterns in the news that, like, these changes need to happen. And I think that, you know, through conversations like the one that you're having here, and through, of course, all the people that we know and speak to regularly that are trying to affect these positive change elements, it's going to happen. And just the same, the legacy pieces of the business and the incumbent players, they're going to do everything they can to slow that change down, and they're good at it. So I think it's going to be a big fight. But I think that in the end, demand is what changes these things. And I just think that the younger generations are going to shift what we make, whether it's because out of necessity, you know, what their interests are. I don't think it matters. I think it's going to happen.
Awesome perspectives, man. And I think we can be, you don't know what you don't know, and you're jaded by what you think you know, right? So we need those type of comments. We can't talk about that stuff enough to help move this change, knowing there's people that are going to be against it. There always will, right? So it's painting that picture that's properly put out there to make meaningful change, to move on. As we close this thing out, make sure you talk about the best way for people to get in touch with Havoc Wool. And the questions, the last couple of questions that we always ask, the first one, I'm super excited for your perspective of what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah, this is a cool question. You know, over the last nearly 10 years that we've been doing this, you know, it's just sort of felt fairly isolated, and, you know, we're just had our head down trying to make a cool product that people wanted to buy. And then, of course, we had to do all this education and communication. And of course, we still do that all day, every day. But, you know, I see things changing, right? I mean, you were talking about 500,000 listens. I got that number right, correct? Yeah, for you guys. And, like, you know, that's a big deal. And there's more and more of this conversation happening. And I think that there's a lot of momentum that's going on right now. But when I think about, you know, technology and construction, you know, my old world is, you know, I pay attention to it for sure. And there's a group in, I think they have a global footprint, but there's a fund manager called Fifth Wall. And it would be fun to get them on here, actually, and hear their perspective. But they've got they have a bunch of things going on, but two heavily focused areas in real estate tech and climate tech. And this is all around the built environment. And, you know, they've raised billions of dollars to invest in this opportunity. And what they very clearly said, I don't want to speak for these guys, but I think I understand, in that they've clearly said that this is an underserved part of the market, and it is absolutely paramount that we start focusing on it. And so their niche is to get there first and find companies that they can invest in and help grow and add to this change in the built environment. So I think that whether it's actual tech and how you manage a house and, you know, smart metering and things along those lines, or it's businesses like ours where you're using smart insulation or smart fibers. Like, I think this opportunity is set to explode, And I think now you're going to see real money get behind it. And I honestly believe that, you know, with a little bit of traction, you get momentum and then these things build on themselves. So I think the next 10 years is going to look a lot different than the last 10 for traction in this space.
Especially people with you that are taking these chances and running a business to make meaningful change. So thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. And as we always close this out, Andrew, what is that one thing you want to leave our contractors and affiliates to think about to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
I think that, you know, we see this a lot where we talk to people, where, you know, when you hire your contractor, of course, they're the best contractor on the planet. And, you know, 6 months into an 18-month build, you know, you're not feeling the same way. And 12 months into an 18-month build, you're over budget, you're pissed off, and you know you can't get another contractor. So, you know, you're frustrated. And we see that an awful lot. And my encouragement to everybody in this space is to, you know, slow down, think about the end result, and let your differentiation and your opportunity to be better than your competitors be that you provide a better finished product. And I don't really know how you do that when you're constantly trying to go as fast as you can. And we see it time and time again. And, you know, of course, it takes longer to install wool, and I'm not angling here to say like, hey, slow down so you can fit my product into the build. I don't really care if you use wool or not. We'll find the people that want it. But I just think that, you know, this space is going to grow irrespective of any macro headwinds. The Economist was saying this morning that we're 3.8 million units underbuilt. We need more housing in the US, and we're going to build it, and we're going to find a way to get it to people. But I just really hope we don't slap up a bunch of crap that needs to be rebuilt in, you know, 20 or 30 years because we used crappy materials and we went too fast. So, you know, we try to align ourselves with people and businesses that are trying to differentiate by aiming to do a better job. And I really hope that we see a lot more of that. And, you know, nobody's asking me for advice, but if they did, that's what I would have to say.
Awesome, Andrew. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story.
Thanks for having us. Really happy to be here, and keep it up. We need you guys getting this word out there, and you know, we'll keep fighting the good fight on our lines, but really glad that you guys exist and are helping people learn more about this space.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Sheep domesticated over 10,000 years ago. And it made me really pause and think when he's like, well, the wool from the sheep has evolved because Mother Earth has evolved. And that just really makes me stop and think, right? And they've been using this stuff in structures since the beginning. Well, nature is changing, right? And so do we really need to spend less on something that we want to last forever? Or should we spend more on something that lasts forever? And my favorite analogy, I love when we get to have experts who have lived this, and they're able to, I think about Alice Leung from Brick and Mortar Ventures, where she comes in and she's like, yeah, you know, it's this robot is the construction, like the Roomba vacuum, that's what this in these parallels, right? And so he talked about the parallels of if he, and I can just see Andrew of going in the backcountry and he's all geared up and we all see him, right? The people that are crazy about their gear. But if the dude jumped out the back on a crazy day and was just had the newspaper around him, he'd be that crazy guy. And so you have to figure out to say, like, have these parallels to get people to understand it. Like, I hear a lot about cars and construction as we blend a lot of this system built living where you're talking about on-site and off-site construction is, would you really, without a manual, because it's one of a kind, throw all the parts to build your car in the driveway? Would you really wear a newspaper to go down them? No. you're going to go get the right stuff, right? And that because these other industries have systemized and are educating the how and the what and the why. And so at the end of the day, what you measure will grow. And I think Andrew's spot on. When it comes to insulation, it's one of those things that there's people are so frustrated by the time you finally get the rough ends and everybody just give in. Insulation is the least of their care because they just want to cover it up and they want to get the cabinets and the countertops in. Tribe, I'm literally living that as we speak. Go to my LinkedIn page and you can see that. And I'm making mistakes, but I'm putting myself out there to say construction's all about learning from them and understanding what you measure on will grow. And if the only thing we measure insulation by when it really comes down to it, the brass tacks is getting through the municipalities and cost, we're screwed. And so that we have to figure out how to use your project and our projects together, but learn from others, right? And don't just give in, right? That's why we have these conversations. And the other analogy when he talked about is the letters from his fans, and we're going to challenge him to get a couple of those and put in the show notes and bring them in as posts into the AOC Master Facilitator Program. I sit there and I think about that as I go to get my special cocktail that he taught me how to go get my holiday cocktail this year. He had somebody that was the total opposite to say, I just want to leave those walls open. Because it just feels so good to see that wool. And he has a picture in his background that's that same way when we had our fireside chat. So that's real sentimental psychology marketing that we have to lead as master facilitators to do that. And Tribe, you can't do it all. In fact, I loved when Andrew said, this is not the solution for everything. But we do have to understand carbon neutrality because there's not enough sheep in New Zealand to do this on every house. We have to figure out how to augment all this stuff. And the U.S. is behind this, behind the eight ball, right? And as we throw, the longer we cast our net, the smaller the world is, especially when it comes to pockets like the amazing place of New Zealand. And so then the other analogy talked about how the next generation, I think about my eight-year-old, how their minds work. Because they listen to, you know, as we go through this remodel, it's been frustrating living here, right? And I think about my family and the fact that in this dining room is the one where I had to give in and the ceiling's going to have spray foam insulation. And now that makes me feel bad. And I'm just being real with everybody out here to say, you better figure out how to combine your trips, but also understand you got to move it along, right? And that's where that daughter talked about, don't do two trips, do one. It's better for the earth. My daughter listens to us frustrated about we're living in a construction zone, want to move it over, but you got to figure out how to do it the right way. And Tribe, I tell you, we've been talking a lot about crusty contractor, and we're in this amazing paradigm shift as I'm going on, you know, 10 years of doing this podcast and meeting with others and 25 years in supply chain. I'm in that gooey middle, and I've never felt it as much as I have before, to where the people, the crusty contractors of the world, it's time to just hang up your bags. Because boy, the next generation, they demand it. And that was the big thing we talked about. And yes, as Andrew said, it takes a little bit longer to put this insulation. And yes, it costs a little bit more upfront. But I leave you with this, Tribe. Does it cost more in the long run? We'll see in the AOC Master Facilitators Group where it's all about this community, right? And Andrew, he talked about Johnny Resvani and the different people that are all building this community, right? And this is a place where our vetted AOC tribe members, you know, whose business owners and leaders can have these closed door sessions, right? Because Andrew and I have to put out there the right stuff to dangle the carrot, right? But in there, we're going to have the conversations. We're going to really challenge each other. And our AOC influencers and the technology and materials and the system built companies that help them. And it's all about we have to grow our business. And Andrew, he was so profound when he talked about that at the very beginning of that podcast, to where he said, when I went to New Zealand, there's all this amazing stuff, but it wasn't big enough. It wasn't being used in mass adoption. And talk about what will I get if I make this change? So I'm super proud of Andrew and his team for taking this change. And Havlik Wool, talk about a company you got to pay attention to, because they are true leaders of the tribe. And what I mean by that is they are creating this momentum, right? They jumped out there and putting it out there. And some days I'm sure have been long for Andrew, and the years are short as they fly by, but I commend them, right? And hopefully we can have Andrew come in and where we have a bonus episode and talk about that. Maybe we bring in and we're having this discussion that we call the AMAs, the Ask Me Anything. And Andrew talked about hemp and a few others, to where how can we all band together and make all our businesses be stronger? And then we're going to take those into different monthly lessons and learn in our workshops, because what we have to do is we have to figure out how to go against the status quo. I'm sure Andrew would have loved, if he knew at the right place, the right time, to help me to say, let's fight back at the municipalities versus give in. And that's where we're going to figure that stuff out. And then most importantly, he talked about it takes longer to do it. And when it takes longer to do it, you better be more efficient. And that's where the handshake board, and that's where we're going to have these job boards and these monthly growth challenges around that, to get the most important thing, which is to connect the warriors that do the work to the purpose and the plan. And so then we're going to have these in-depth product reviews. Hopefully Havlik Wool is one of those and many others, and then bring these testimonials. So as this is now launched, and we went out and got some amazing people like Andrew that have been living this, that are speaking the same language, come join us. And that's why we want you to join you. And we'll continue, as we always say, 7 times for the first time. Maybe you'll sign up and we'll see you in the group. Thank you so much, Tribe. We appreciate you all. Happy New Year. Have as much fun as possible. Appreciate you all.